WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
You know you're in for it when you're told on page 9, knowledge of death came early to Graham Greene. After 5 books on Joseph Conrad, Norman Sherry was Graham Greene's hand-picked choice to write his biography. Greene, of course, is obsessed with Conrad, and Sherry had made it a point to go everywhere in the world that Conrad went before committing him to paper. Perhaps the globe-trotting Greene sought sadistically to punish anyone seeking to improve on his own too elegant and evasive memoirs, A Sort of Life and Ways of Escape. Or maybe he thought that his secrets of character were safe from any mind as simple as Sherry's, and that a dose of the biographer's porky prose would drive all readers back to the original. Anyway, here is Volume 1 of Sherry, all 783 pages of it. It drags us gasping and petulant up to 1939, before the important novels were written, only half a century to go, and the reviews I've seen so far verge on the worshipful, and I'm mystified. Going everywhere a writer's gone, to Liberia and Mexico, to Haiti, Argentina, Paraguay, and Panama, to Antwerp and Indochina, is no substitute for thinking about what the writer's written, why he wrote it that way, and what he left out because of art, or guilt, or cussedness. It's the wrong kind of archaeological digging. Richard Ellman didn't take time off for sodomy before writing of Oscar Wilde, nor have any biographers of Dostoevsky submitted to epileptic seizure. That Greene's childhood was unhappy isn't news. Except for Updike and Nabokov, all writers seem to have been sad when small. That he crossed psychological borders as well as national frontiers has been a staple of Greene criticism for 3 decades, as have his fixation on betrayal, his nose for spiritual decay, and his trafficking with prostitutes. And Sherry doesn't fare much better down in the archives. If we are to spend so much time inspecting the exchange of insipid letters between a callow Greene, then an editor at the Times of London, and Vivian Dayrell Browning, the sexually fearful young woman he would marry, shouldn't Sherry at least wonder whether the famous conversion to Roman Catholicism hadn't more to do with going to bed than finding God? He might also have wondered if there might not have been, right at the beginning of Greene's career, a fateful confusion of eros and grace. Along the same lines, Sherry makes much of the young Graham's psychoanalysis and subsequent and drastic change of personality. This material cries out for development and comparison and cross-reference with other writers who've been analyzed. But Sherry's on a boat or in a jungle. Greene's analyst happened to have been a Jungian. A biographer with a sense of humor might at least have speculated on the consequences for literature had the analyst been a Freudian, or a Reichian, or a Sullivanian. I began a list of Greene's dreams, as reported here, of empty cupboards and witches with white puffy hands and fleshy faces, of the Princess of Time with black-skinned servant girls whose touch was death, of slashed throats and murderous Chinese agents and old women with ringworm, of murdering J.B. Priestley and the President of Liberia. And then I had the worst dream of all myself, that all of his books should disappear, and we'd have to imagine Graham Greene from the lumpy pudding of his biographer.